There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Chinese chicken. Chinese chicken.
No, that you were singing.
Like a bumstick in their brain. Chicken.
Bare naked ladies. Oh, that's what it is. Oh, goodness. Never again to be uttered on this podcast.
What is ironic about the name of the band Bare Naked Ladies is that I'm pretty certain any single member of that band had never seen once a bare naked lady.
That's right, and they're actually fully clothed men. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I'm Ben Kissel, as always, staring at the beautiful Marcus Parks.
Hello. And speaking of bare naked ladies, we're covering Leonard Lake and Charles today, part two.
And you're Henry Zebrowski. Say that you're Henry so people know.
My name is Alton Brown from the Cooking Channel.
Yes, I love you on the Food
and
Network.
And you've been using your graters wrong. You gotta rub them sideways, not up and down, you fucking assholes.
Yeah.
I'm a food nerd.
Yeah, I think he has a show called Good Eats. He's one of the most obnoxious ones on the network.
Good Eats is a paralyzingly boring show.
That's right. And the food doesn't even look that good to eat.
And speaking of Good Eats,
yes.
We got Leonard Lake and Charles.
Working
today.
Out the worst possible segues. This is disgusting. Yes, we're back.
All right, Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. Last episode, we got Leonard. He just joined the hippie commune, and people were kind of getting upset with him.
They didn't like him very much.
No.
This horrible, balding, bearded man who liked to shoot off his guns, talking military lingo, not doing well in the hippie commune.
You know what hit me as I was walking here today is that I realized that Leonard Lake is the type of guy that Centerfold is his favorite song
from the
Jay Giles band. Yeah. He's also the kind of guy who'll brag about how he's like, I can get a whole vagina in my mouth. Where he'll like just put the bottom lip at the bottom of the vagina. I'm like,
and
like weirdly tongue stab the middle of it.
Just strategically missing all the sensor points of a vagina that might make a woman aroused.
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So Leonard Lake. He was, and this is not surprising at all, a big fan of Soldier of Fortune magazine.
Nothing like a good, even-tempered magazine.
Soldier of Fortune, if you didn't know, was long a refuge for not only survivalists like Lake, but also, especially in the late 70s, early 80s, a refuge for mercenaries willing to fight in African civil wars and straight-out hitmen.
And also losers. And complete and total losers wrapped up in fantasies of grandeur in which it would never do any of that shit.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of a militarized person in Sudan or something like that acting very similar to Billy Madison on Nudie Magazine Day, but when it's Soldier of Fortune Day.
So Lake, looking for a friend to share his survivalist knowledge and lifestyle with, placed an ad under the name Tom Myers and got responses from enough people that when former soldier Mark Novak got a hold of him, Lake had long been known in the survivalist community.
And I'll put it this way, Leonard Lake was really good at making up fake names.
Great at it.
Good pseudonyms, because Tom Myers sounds like a guy who definitely wouldn't be raping a bunch of people in a bunker.
No, absolutely not.
It sounds like a guy who would just be sort of looking at a bunch of people in a bunker, hanging out with them, being one of a member of a group of people inside of a bunker.
Yeah, he's a guy who has his own mayonnaise jars in the basement. He calls it Myers Mayonnaise, and he's going door to door and selling it throughout the neighborhood.
And it really rolls off the tongue when you want to meet somebody and go, hi, my name is Tom Myers.
Yes.
So, Novak, 21 years old, visited Lake at the ranch for 3 days and had a reasonably good time.
You know, they played, you know, some Pinochle and they hung out. They watched some old episodes of MASH and then he made some mashed potatoes. But that was it, which was weird to have just carbs and no protein for food. But they were good. They were really salty, but they were good.
Showed him some nudie pictures and cocked a couple
always
of guns.
That. Always, yeah. Always showing the nudie. We cannot stress this enough, how Leonard Lake would show nude pictures that he had taken
to every person that he met.
Everybody. But Novak came away. He did have a good time, but he came away from the experience describing Lake as a bit of a, quote, shit talker.
Well, he was a shit talker. At this point, all he was talk about his bunker and all the things he had prepared for the end times. Because at this point, he was just living in a trailer.
Yeah.
right.
desperately looking for other survivalist friends, which is just like the weakest thing for a survivalist to do. Mm-hmm. I thought survivalists were all about how, like, I stand on my own. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, it was about being alone and only needing like one pair of shoes.
Well, maybe if he had more, if he saw more action in Vietnam like John Rambo did, he would know how to truly be a survivalist.
No, no, no. All Leonard Lake spent his time doing, as far as I could tell, the extent of Leonard Lake's survivalist skills was putting shit in a plastic drums and burying it out in the woods.
He learned how to twist knobs on a radio in the army on our dime.
Oh my God.
So, at the very least, Novak had a good enough time with Leonard Lake to suggest the experience to his new friend, Charles Ng.
Just the fact that anybody could be friends with either one of these pieces of shit, it's just like, I can't believe how long, Jeffrey Dahmer needed a friend.
Yeah, but
Jeffrey Dahmer needed a friend. These guys are just having friends come out of the woodwork. They're having like poker games.
Well, I would say these guys are slightly more personable and, they have the ability for friendship slightly more than Dahmer.
I guess so, but their main focus is building bunkers and group rape.
Much less dangerous for the friend if you don't have a drill bit going through your skull in an attempt to make you a human sex zombie.
Well, that is an interesting thing about Charles Ng and Leonard Lake. See, Leonard Lake really only had one friend throughout his life, Charles Fat Man Gunner. But Charles Ng,
Charles
actually,
Fat Charles, it was more specific than that.
Excuse me, Fat Charles Gunner. But Charles Ng, he made friends wherever he went. He had friends in the army, places that he would work at. Later on, he had friends there. Every time he got into trouble, Leonard Lake, or Charles Ng, always had somebody to call.
But he was just a sour little man. Every time you hear him talk, he's just like, oh, you never, they always lie about what I do. They lie about what I done, and I was just hanging around. I just hang around. You know, I come around and I bring, I bring a big fancy pot. Yes, I brought a wok. Oh, is it funny? Is it funny? Everybody riff about the things I bring to the friendship.
I mean, we can learn a lot from the movie The Hangover. It's always kind of fun to have a feisty Asian fella hanging around.
I guess so.
Yeah, I suppose so. So Ng, at this moment, is serving in the Marines in Hawaii. And his time in the Marines was fairly uneventful until the eventual crash and burn. He was generally described as a loner, although he would entertain his fellow soldiers with his kung fu skills, which he would kick pencils out of their hands. And he was actually known for his kung fu skills and was pretty good with nunchucks.
This is my question, again. Do we actually have witness testimony written down that says he was good at nunchucks? Or is he just one of those pieces of shit that you'd meet at, like, day camp when you're, like, 12 years old, who's just like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty much expert at nunchuck. You should come by my garage. I have two paper towel rolls tied together with a rubber band, and I'll fucking whip it across your face until you're blind, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to take him at his word. The same way as the 6'7" man, I just say, I can dunk the basketball, and he's like, I'm sure you can. I can't get off the ground.
Yeah, but one look at your ankles, and they know that you're not much of a jumper.
That's right. I used to have blood clots when I was 21 and really messed with my ankles, so thank you, Henry.
Well, Charles Ng was described by former commanders as an exemplary Marine. As far as Marines went, that like, because he was also obsessed with violence. Mm. Like, he was the type of guy that would chant the Marine, like the type of shit that they chant during the run, like the jogs during boot camp. He would say stuff like,
no kill, no thrill.
Over and over and over again.
Private, listen, we love your exuberance, all right? But I'm really going to need you to hit some of the L's in this, okay? I know it's, there is a barrier here, and I understand that we here in the Marines, we are equal opportunity. We're really going to try for you to hit these L's, all right? Okay, of course, Commander. Yes, sir. No kill.
All right, just repeat. No kill, no thrill.
No kill.
No kill.
No dear. Just give me gun. Why everybody always complain about how I say things and what I do and what I bring to friendship?
So despite being a weird guy, he's always, and that's the other thing they said, that he'd constantly be in the corner practicing his spin kicks.
Fucking loser.
No, I mean, this is what he has to do. I mean, this, how difficult is it for an Asian American to find a identity in this country, especially at this time? All he had was Bruce Lee and Kung Fu films. What else was he supposed to do?
Hey, we have some great Asian personalities that made their way in this country. Kobayashi, and we got Sun Yi Allen. Some big time, big players out there.
George Takei.
At this point, he's doing nothing.
He was Sulu at this point.
People were making fun of him.
And the guy that was the butler in the Green Hornet, Kato.
That's
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee.
But I think that Charles Ng is not doing anything for Asian culture, doing high kicks, being like, oh, idea bird can't even cross to me. Because a bird even comes close, I destroy it with the, oh, I got a big swipe kick. Big swipe kick. Look at me. Look at me when I do it. Why is everybody always complaining about what I do and when I practice my speaking?
Well, he could have used a buddy, I think.
Well, his buddy was, in fact, Mark Novak, the guy that had visited Leonard Lake. The two had met while they were shopping in the Army surplus store. They noticed that they were wearing identical scuba diving watches.
Hey, buddy, what you wear? What's that?
It's a Casio scuba diving watch. Yeah, I love it. It's one of the best watches I've ever.
Shit, my brand.
Do you have the same?
Look at it with your eyeballs, dude.
Man, it's so like I am white and you are different white.
But I'm a different type of white. Yeah. But I gotta say, we friends now, and you ever once complain about how we what I do and what I bring to friendship, I tell you what. I will put you down in a bunk. I tie you to a recliner bed. I cut off your clothes with scissors, and I watch you as my buddy prays with your balls.
I think I'm going to recommend this guy go meet that psycho Leonard Lake to get him away from me.
Yeah, well,
Tom Myers.
Well, they did, after they met at the Army surplus store, they decided to go have a soda together because they're both sober.
Which also shows me this is the problem. I if you do have a drinking problem or a drug problem, I'm glad that you get out of it and you're sober and then you're being strong, but a lot of times it means that you're an insufferable piece of shit.
I have no problem with recovering alcoholics, but for the person who's never touched any drugs, including pharmaceutical drugs, at any point in their life, you haven't lived.
Yeah.
So while they're having their soda, they started talking about, you know, survivalism, which Charles Ng was already pretty into, and Novak mentioned, hey, I just stayed a few days with this guy out in California. His name is Tom Myers. You ought to look him up sometime. So Charles Ng, this meeting would actually be pretty fortuitous for him because soon after this, he would go AWOL from the Marines after getting caught stealing $11,000 in machine guns, grenade launchers, rifles, and pistols from the base armory.
Which is insane. He was obsessed with weaponry. He loved guns. But at the same time, what we're going to discover about Charles Ng is that he had a true problem with kleptomania. Yeah. Like, he loved to steal. He liked to get things over on people. He wanted to be smarter than everybody else, which is why him and Leonard Lake got along completely, because the idea is there were the last two brave men in America by the end to really get what they want. Yeah. Like, real men's rights activists. You know, I'm like, they're really, really great. Really strong men.
Yeah. And really, man, as we get more and more into this, it's like Ng and Lake were like the proto-men's activists.
Yes, it's
like
horrible.
The really obnoxious ones. The ones that are just fucking terrible, terrible pieces of shit. The ones who refer to women as whores constantly.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And he set all this up where he was talking a bunch of shit about how he was going to rob the armory, and everyone's just been like, all right, Charles, whatever, man. I don't think you should, but okay. So Charles Ng made friends with this one loser guy that was the night watchman at the armory, and he realized, like, basically they had kind of struck up this sort of relationship with each other, and he had only struck up that relationship in order to get access to the armory. So Charles Ng is like literally trying to be friends, but the way Charles Ng is friends is truly like he goes, he's like, well, what's your name? Your name is Brian? We friends, huh, Brian? Yeah, is that fun? Yeah, we friends, huh? I show you nunchuck. Come back, oh, look, you see my car here? I got nunchuck, and I got, picture of Bruce Lee, because you know why? He's so tall. That's what I like about him, he's so tall. All right, yeah. Now what you're gonna do, what he did was, it said to him, it's like, at night, you're going to pretend to go to sleep outside of the armory, and I am going to go and steal everything from inside of it and leave, and then you have the perfect alibi, which is you were sleeping.
One of the worst alibis you can give.
Yes, and then the dude eventually just gave him up because all these grenade launchers were missing from the armory, and then finally he was just like, Charles took it, because they sort of assumed Charles was fucking around doing something because he was just being really shifty.
Yeah, really sneaky like a ninja, and I think they followed the pitter-patter of steps back to his bunk, and they found him with all the guns cuddling.
But true ninja is not found because true ninja is one with shadow.
That is a good point. Yes.
So Aang, after he was caught, he managed to escape the custody of the chasers, which is slang for military police. He climbed out of a window and camped out in the Hawaiian jungle for a few days where he said he, quote,
developed diarrhea from being continually wet. And that's not my fault, because I go out there and you're like, yeah, and I go out in Hawaii, yeah, of course, yeah, it's a beach area, right? And it's pretty warm everywhere. But I assume I go lay down next to a volcano. It's got to be dry, right? It's a volcano made out of rock, you know? But you know it's wet, right? And now I'm sitting around, and I've got a wet bottom, and I've got diarrhea out of my pants, and I can't hide my guns anymore. Everybody's always complaining.
Yeah, there was no toilet paper or anything. How did you clean up, or you just...
I found a koala.
You used a koala bear.
Yes.
Do you wipe your butt?
You see, a koala bear is made out of toilet paper. But have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen the ad with the two bears, and he gets a poo-poo on the outside of his
bear? The Charmin ads, right.
That's what they don't show you. It's that they skin a koala, and they take the surface half of the koala, and they wipe the bear bibs with it.
So toilet paper is made out of koala.
So after a few days of diarrhea in the jungle, Aang eventually ventured out, called up Mark Novak, told him to put him into contact with Leonard Lake. But unfortunately for Aang, Leonard was no longer residing at the hippie ranch that we talked about in our last episode. For after months of his surrounding hippies complaining about Lake's bad habits, the conflicts eventually came to a head when Leonard's shed, stockpiled with ammunition, caught fire and exploded in a hail of metal debris and bullet fragments.
Which seems to be the number one reason why you don't have a stockpile of bullets and fucking ammunition.
Oh, I love the idea.
That's why you don't have a stockpile.
I'm a huge fan. 4th of July came early that year. Oh. I mean, these are fireworks, but in their truest form.
But can you imagine that? Just like a hippie. It's like you got the black magic, like the cult guys, like next to Leonard Lake, and they're just hanging out, like trying to drink a goblet of grape juice and going like, it's like, I think we're going to have a plentiful fall stolsis. And they'll flash.
I like the way that Lawrence Lake shook up that community.
Oh,
he should have been shook up a little bit.
Yeah, shook him up enough where they kicked his ass out.
Like Sinbad in the movie Houseguest.
That's right. Those white suburbanites needed a little bit of culture in their life.
So after being kicked out of the ranch, Leonard and Cricket landed in Philo, California, attracted by a magazine article that described Philo as the perfect place to sit out a worldwide nuclear holocaust.
Gotta get there.
Gotta get to Philo. So Leonard got a job managing a hotel, while Cricket continued her career as a teacher's aide. And shortly after relocating, the two got hitched on September 13th, 1981, with Fat Charles serving as best man, just as Leonard had done for him years before.
Now that's true friendship.
Yeah.
It is.
So Charles Aang would arrive soon after the marriage, and the three of them made fast friends and moved out to Indian Creek Ranch. And the owner of the hotel that Leonard Lake was managing was reportedly happy to be rid of the guy who seemed to only be able to talk about the nuclear holocaust and his quote-unquote ops.
God, what a pain in the asshole he must have been.
Yeah. Right, and those are the worst kinds of pain. How did Charles Aang find him exactly? So he went to the commune and was just like, where is he? And they told him where he had gone to, Leonard Lake had gone to?
Well, I think they had gotten a hold of him before they went to the ranch. I'm not exactly.
Oh, well, they started writing letters.
Well, the problem with with Leonard Lake and Charles Aang is that the timeline is extremely difficult to truly lay out.
Was because it was this kind of drifter mentality. Yeah. Leonard Lake had no real address. He was going between various hippie communes. He was operating under a pseudonym, like getting letters sent to him from various survivalists who were also writing under pseudonyms. The whole point is to be completely isolated and secret. He accepts Charles Aang technically as a job because he was supposed to be there sort of be like his assistant, where he was like paying him to do kind of odd jobs around the house, which mostly just included holding young girls' ankles while he serviced at them, and he just kind of got involved in it. But you know how it was. It was like Charles Aang showed up with, like, you know, a pack on a stick and just saw Leonard Lake, like, whittling a pair of handcuffs out in front of his trailer, just going like,
glad you found me, stranger. And then all of a sudden they were just rollicking good buddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot like Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole. The actual timeline is very muddy. And there's not a whole lot of witnesses to really corroborate exactly what was going on in their lives at the time. But as to why Leonard Lake and Charles Ng got along so well so fast, Ng later said, and this is an exact quote with the exact syntax that Ng used.
I look at him as a person that have, like, seen it to me. I view him as a patriot because he have fought for the country, and I view him as a person who was very knowledgeable about different things like homesteading and history and geography, and also there are things of common interest that we have in the Marine Corps that we usually talk about. And he never complained. He never once complained about what I bring to friendship.
It does seem like true friendship. I mean, this guy loved what Lake was selling, and Lake didn't mind when he was when Ng kept on kicking pencils out of his hands.
But also, we're going to find out that Leonard Lake also, sort of like H.H. Holmes, which is very interesting, I just made that connection, used Peitzel as sort of like his goon. Mm-hmm. He's going to use Charles Ng as his goon and eventually is going to constantly sell him down the river.
Yeah.
Every single time the two of them are caught in like a crossfire or where like they're both caught in a crime together, the two of them immediately turn on each other.
Yeah.
And Leonard Lake, I mean, what we're going to find when they're finally discovered down the line is that Leonard Lake just shot fucking Charles Ng, just fucking ducked out on him and left him to be arrested.
Mm-hmm. Much like how the Green Hornet treated Kato.
The Green Hornet treated Kato wonderfully.
No. Kato had a lot of secret work
partners.
To do.
They were full partners.
Did he own Kato?
That's a good question.
He was his butler. Kato was his butler.
Exactly.
He was paid a living wage.
So my analogy holds up. Perfect.
So the trio's stay at Indian Creek Ranch would also be short-lived as Leonard once again started stockpiling weapons.
Just have one weapon.
Well, he liked weapons, of course. He's a survivalist. Survivalists and a stockpile of weapons go hand in hand. This, of course, caught the attention of the locals who managed to either hear about or figure out that the odd little Chinese man who was puttering about the property was an escaped fugitive. The cops raided the place, found Ng, and the illegal modifications Lake had made to his guns, and arrested them both. Ng was sent back to Hawaii to face a court-martial.
Which is the nicest place to have a court-martial.
The best place to have a court-martial, while Leonard would skip bail after his arrest, and his life as a fugitive would officially begin.
He would say that in his diary that he realized that, like, when he was waiting to be transferred between the holding cell and where he was supposed to go to be tried, he was just like, this is my time.
Yeah,
I'm going to make Operation Miranda happen now. Like, he had been waiting all this time because he had realized that. The one thing about a consummate shit talker is that deep, deep, deep inside, they know they're a shit talker. Mm-hmm. And know in the end, they can't really be full badass unless they do something about it. And that's what he decided to do, was make the choice and be the Leonard Lake that we would now know him as.
Yeah. Backs against the wall, no other choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, however, unfortunately, Cricket would not want to live the fugitive life with Charles Ng. And so, even though the two would date on and off for the next few years, Leonard was once again a solitary man and in need of a new identity, literally.
Because that's what he realized as a man on the run. A part of that is you need identities to cycle through. Like, you need to set up, like, leases, and you need to get, like, cars and shit.
Yeah.
You need to do a bunch of legal shit. In order to do that, you need a license.
Yeah. You need a license, a social security card, and you need to be able to cycle through them fairly quickly.
So how you do that is by shooting them in the head and grinding up their bones afterwards.
Yep, and he did that to his younger brother, Donald.
Now, we'll remember that the last episode we talked about how all he talked about was to talk shit about killing his brother.
Yeah.
But he never did it until he actually did it.
Yeah, until he actually killed his own brother.
They didn't really look alike, but he knew that he could pass for him if you just kind of take the license plate and whap it in front of a police's face and then run away.
Sure.
Yeah. So he brought him up, shot him in the head. And while Lake and Cricket were divorced, she still allowed him to live at her family's cabin up in Willsyville, California, not far from San Francisco. And this cabin would be where Leonard Lake finally would have the perfect place to carry out Operation Miranda.
So this was the first kill under Lake's belt, right?
As far as we know, and there are also rumors to say, like, one person did say that they caught or they helped Leonard Lake take a refrigerator out to the dump and the door was welded shut before this. So there are a little rumors here and there, but who knows if that's just someone looking for attention.
We've all lived in a college house before, and opposed to cleaning the refrigerator, you just weld it shut and put it on the curb.
Absolutely.
Because it can get pretty disgusting. So this might have been the first person he fantasized about killing, sort of similar to Edward Gein.
But you're going to... Yeah.
And then he did kill his brother. So it's a hell of a way to... I guess it's you go back to what you want to do in the first place, and then it's a good jumping point, I suppose.
But now we're going to see the pattern that Leonard Lake and Charles Ng are going to settle into, which is killing for convenience and purpose. He killed his brother to get his ID. You're going to see this again and again, where he's going to kill men in order to steal their identities and use their identities and their property, and then he then kills for passion, which is a part of his sexual release. And so he's doing it all now. Now he's very similar to an H.H. Holmes.
Yeah.
Because he's an opportunity killer and a sexual killer.
Yeah, absolutely. So this house was actually the perfect location for this. It was the end of 200 yards of unpaved road, relatively secluded spot, surrounded by huge, thick Californian trees and low hills. There were other houses nearby, but they were positioned in such a way that gave Leonard all the privacy that he needed.
What kind of hold did he have over Cricket that she would let him use her house?
Well,
I don't think that any other man wanted to be with the multiple used Cricket.
Cricket was kind of hot in a gangly, kind of weird face.
Cricket was hot in like a Carla Faye Tucker kind of way.
In a way that you find extremely hot, is what you're
saying.
The
way that I found attractive, yes.
Well, we don't know if she wasn't slobbing knobs all over town. I would assume she wasn't exactly, held too close to the celibacy.
Well, there is a lot of speculation as far as what Cricket's involvement in all of these crimes actually were.
Well, this is where I'm going to say that's what this points to. Later on, she completely absolved herself from any sort of involvement with the crime. She got immunity for her testimony, but she was definitely an orchestrator. She had helped bring women into the scenario earlier on, where they brought it more, because before they were just doing sort of torture play, where they would abuse her and then not kill her. But as they started killing the women, mostly it's because I think that she kind of validated in her head that Leonard Lake was killing these women in order to get rid of the bodies, and so you don't have any witnesses for them to talk about what they were doing alone in the room.
Yeah. And that is one area where the men's rights movement is not entirely off base. The incarceration rates between men and women are drastically more for men than they are for women.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
Very good.
We don't side with them.
No, absolutely not. That's just a fact.
Yes, it is a fact. But the reason why Cricket didn't go away is because all of the evidence they had against Cricket was extremely circumstantial. There was no way that they were going to actually charge her for a crime. So the reason why they gave her immunity was because they thought that she would have some information to put away Charles Ng for good. So it was actually, on the part of the prosecution, a good move.
And the big tell about Cricket's involvement is that she had spank calluses. Just like two calluses on her buttocks in the shape of a human hand.
A lot of talcum powder around the house, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
So Leonard Lake's new location. At first, he did reasonably well with the new neighbors, although the first interactions were not without their speed bumps. See, Lake had bought a dog that he named Wubon.
Now, what does Wubon mean?
I Googled it and nothing came up.
Nothing.
All right.
Not a single goddamn thing came up for Wubon.
I think he just looked at it and said, Wubon. And then he's like, that's your name, Wubon.
Yeah. Wubon was a German shepherd, and one of the neighbor's dogs decided to get a little frisky with Wubon, and Lake, taking exception, shot the neighbor's dog.
That's not a good move.
That's not how
you get ingratiated into your secretly secluded place where you're trying to create your sex dungeon.
Absolutely not. You let the dogs hump it out.
Well, the neighbors, at first understandably upset, were eventually charmed by Lake. They invited him to a barbecue the following Saturday, and after further conversation, Lake and the couple exchanged pornographic videos. And Lake officially is comfortable. at his new place.
What was happening back then?
This is just how people.
Is this the 70s, Marcus?
This is 1983.
This is the 80s. Oh, my God.
But this is the thing, is that Leonard Lake, that's the only reason why they were even charmed by Leonard Lake, is because he was the type of man that was making homemade porno videos that he would share with his neighbors at a barbecue.
Ronald Reagan's lying in a hospital bed, almost dying from gunshot wounds, and these people are in the woods exchanging porno and forgiving someone for killing their dog?
Technically, life is better that way, I guess.
I guess so.
So it was now time for Lake to begin his search for his M-Lady, as he called her. He rented out an apartment in the infamous Pink Palace of Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, long known to be a refuge for transients. So here at the Pink Palaces, he used the name Alan Dre and started to make friends with some of his fellow residents. Three of his victims would come from the Pink Palace. Vietnam vet Randy Jacobson, known for being a little too trusting.
Oh, which is normally the opposite for a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
And well, he's just looking for somebody to be nice to him. The other one was Maurice Rock, a groovy pothead guitar player. And Cheryl Okoro, Maurice's girlfriend. Now, Lake lured Maurice and Okoro up to the mountains, telling them that they could have all the weed they wanted if they would just come up and help him harvest his crop.
He lured them with weed, huh?
He lured them with weed.
Wow.
And while Maurice's complete body would be found dressed in the same three-piece corduroy suit he left San Francisco in, all that would be found of Okoro would be a section of leg bone and a neck vertebrae that they ID'd her with using DNA.
She didn't live, huh?
No.
Can't live like that.
No. It's not like she's a transformer that comes apart in pieces and then would go back together. Like, yep.
Right.
No, that's not going to work. But before her death, evidence suggests that Okoro would be what we could call the proto-M-Lady.
His practice M-Lady.
For at this point, the bunker wasn't... The construction on the bunker was not yet completed, but concerning Okoro, police would find a picture of her standing outside of Leonard's house wearing handcuffs.
So this has got to be the worst final thought in your head when you get up to the top of the mountain, you're like, there's no weed, and then you're immediately hit in the back of the head with a crowbar or something like that.
That's exactly what it is.
It's really sad.
Very sad.
Because weed's so innocent.
At least give them the weed. At least when you're drugged and then murdered, you got the drug.
And then this poor Maury Rock is just sitting there just going like, I thought... We were just gonna smoke weed, man.
Yeah.
And Leonard's Lake's just like, there's no weed here. Only condom wrappers. condoms, man. You're lame.
Where's the condoms? And then he takes out his penis. He's got 30 on there.
What?
Yeah, kind of fun. But these are like archetypes from every horror movie.
They really are.
Girl, you're stoner.
Mm-hmm, yeah, girl, stoner, kind of quiet Vietnam, quiet veteran that just kind of wants to be left alone. They all end up dying, though. But Okoro, the closest she would come to being an M-Lady, and this is another thing that suggests very heavy Cricket involvement. Cricket would play Okoro in a pornographic video that she and Lake sent to a collector of erotica.
And these were the ones he filmed a lot of, just like close-up pussy ones.
They were what those videos. Like, you know the porn videos where it's just like the genitals?
Out of context.
It looks like
a prawn from District 9.
Like, she'll kind of go like, plap, 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 plap.
Yeah, she was masturbating. But it was the up-close genital. Anybody out there who makes pornography, just get out of there. I want to see the full picture. I want to see the whole thing.
Vaginas are beautiful. I like to see them.
Yes.
But I say, let's get some face in there.
I want to see her face.
There's been an uptick in the male butthole shots. I want to say that as well.
Yeah, get those out of here. No one wants the behind that.
The back of the balls.
Yeah, it was the 80s was the heyday for those, but they're coming back for some reason.
I hate it when they do that. They shoot underneath the man's balls into the sex.
And before you think we're getting into sex talk, that is an actual exactly what the conversation was between Lake and his neighbors while they watched the sex tape. These problems have been going on since the 80s.
And by the way, Randy Jacobson, the reason why he was killed, disability checks.
Which is quite ironic for the fact that Leonard Lake grew up saying all these people that were living off welfare were vampires.
Yeah, exactly. And this is also a trick that Leonard would use over and over again. He would deliberately pick people who got government checks to kill, and then he would use various identities. He wouldn't actually, like, he would kill one person and then sign a check from that person to one of his alter egos, one of his stolen identities, and then cash the check that way. It was just this huge shell game.
Do you think that he put the check in his left hand and then like slowly gave it to his right hand and then shook his own hand?
Thank you, Mr. Myers. You're welcome, Mr. Rock. You're welcome.
And, of course, at the same time that he was picking these people off in San Francisco, he also started his journal, which, unsurprisingly, it's mostly whining about how women are quote-unquote whores, longing about Cricket, saying things like,
"Why do I love her so? Wish I could turn it off."
And, of course, his musings on his M-ladies. This is something from his journal about the Collector.
"Ah, the Collector. Has it really been near 20 years I've carried this fantasy? Miranda, my lovely little prisoner of the future. I suppose in my way I am the same wimp as the hero, and in my way just as crazy. I have no doubt we wimps have been compensating for our inability since the dawn of history. Sad, really. Still, how can we die if we never live?"
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Nerd alert, nerd alert, nerd alert, nerd alert. Unbelievable. These guys are pathetic.
They're absolutely pathetic. Yeah, I mean, it reads like a fucking Reddit post.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and this is also, and Leonard, he also wrote a lot about his survivalist beliefs. This is, again, from his journal.
"Amusing. Our, quote, land of the free, unquote, is not prepared to deal effectively with a truly free man. What can they do to one who carries cyanide pills in his pockets? Oh, tiny penis."
He doesn't think it's the land of the free because the land of the free doesn't want him to have a murder basement where he films everybody dying at his hands.
Yeah, they hate it when he kills people for quote-unquote identities.
Oh, I see.
Quote-unquote welfare checks.
Wow, I've heard a lot of reasonings behind this is why America isn't the most free country, but this isn't one of them.
No, 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 no. This is not valid. So around March of 1983, Leonard decides that it's time to shed his brother's identity, and in his mind, the most logical replacement was an identity that he already knew how to manipulate.
An identity with a lot of room to give inside of it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, please, please tell me it's Charles Ng. Tell me that he goes in brown face. Zelig, the great Woody Allen film.
Wonderful film. No, at this point, it is time to finally implement Operation Fish. The plan was to kill his best friend, Charles Gunner.
Please, Fat Charles.
Fat Charles, and use his name and identification to stay ahead of the law. He called it Operation Fish as both a means of subterfuge and just a little joke to himself.
Which is a very interesting, because this is the, I love the fucking this nerd piece of shit. Gunner, well aware of how large a man he was, would often refer to himself as a beached whale, and Lake thought that if anyone stumbled upon his plans, there's no way they would make the connection between Gunner and Operation Fish, as in the words of Don Lassiter in Die For Me, whales aren't even fish, they're mammals.
God, I want to murder this man.
But it's also, Leonard Lake was also kind of fat.
He was a bit of a chubber.
So make a fun of Charles Gunner for being fat. You're fat, too.
Yeah, but Gunner was super fat.
Yeah,
Gunner
the thinner was, fat always makes fun of the larger fat.
Yeah, absolutely. To get the nickname of Fat Charles, you have to be very fat.
Yeah, Gunner was 5'8", 400 pounds.
Ooh.
Yeah, people tend to associate with with individuals in a relatively, like, weight-wise and physical attraction-wise. And then there's always the hot one, but, you know, she can top out at 5.
Yeah,
she hangs out with 4s and 3s and men as well.
He was a real dwarf. What's that movie called?
Dwarf on Golf?
Dwarf playing golf.
No, Duff. What was the movie with the girl that's supposed to be ugly, but she's not ugly, and they say she's ugly just because she's got brown hair or something?
She's all that.
No, the other one where it's called, like, Dife.
Every romantic comedy.
Yeah, that's every high school comedy, yeah. But She's All That is the same exact plot.
Are you talking about Clueless? When they had the audacity to make
Clueless.
That beautiful...
I think it's called, like, Clarf.
I do love the movie Clarf. It's about that talking shoe.
I'm a big fan of Clarf. Here's a bit of information about Charles Gunner, by the way. Described by his neighbors as, quote, an overweight, good-natured, if somewhat oafish ne'er-do-well... Gunner often beat his children, and this was a fact that Leonard would use to justify his murder. So there would be a lot of false starts to Operation Fish. This is from Leonard's journal dated April 5th, 1983.
Operation Fish failed. Charles is simply too heavy to move. Sigh.
He writes sigh at the end of a lot of journal entries. Like, actually writes out the word
sigh. Yeah, like
he's
a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Lake failed again when Charles refused to eat poison snacks that Lake had made for him. And failed yet again when Lake tried to kill him with poison gas, but didn't use enough to knock him out.
He's a big guy. I love the poison snacks. I just want to see Lake cooking them up. This has got to work.
Absolutely. It's just, it's like a bunch of like anchovies and cheese on crackers. And he's just like, hey, you want some of our new, hey, Fat Charles. Hey, Fat Charles. Want to try some of my these snacks I made? It's for lunch.
I, wouldn't you believe it, I've started my diet today. You know, I always say I'll start my diet tomorrow. I've started it today. This is my day.
You never
Leonard, thank you so much for supporting me, because you know that I've been trying to lose weight. It's been a really big problem
but
in my life, and I have a bad heart.
Well, thank you for your support. My new snacks that I saved in the kitchen to make Fat Charles!
Literally any other day I would have eaten those.
Sigh.
Leonard Lake would finally succeed on April 24th, 1983, and told Gunner's wife that her husband had left her for another woman and wouldn't be returning. Unsurprisingly, Gunner's wife wouldn't look into his disappearance for another 2 years.
God damn it.
This seems to be from H.H. Holmes to the 1980s here. Can you just do that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Albert Fish did it as well. You're just like, the kid's gone. They ran away.
I was watching this this true crime show last night called The FBI Files from the early 90s, which is retarded. It's on the new Netflix. It's on Netflix. Recently added on Netflix. And that's what they say. One of the police officers was talking about a bunch of missing women. It's like, if you are an adult, you are legally allowed to disappear.
Yeah.
You can just disappear.
Yeah, and what Leonard Lake would do is when he killed somebody, he would write letters to he would find out who he needed to contact to pretty much keep these people from being reported missing. He wasn't able to do it every time, but a lot of times he was able to pick up these people who were kind of drifters. He did it with the Vietnam vet, that he would just write a letter and send it off to one of their friends and be like, hey, you know, I came up to, you know, Sacramento and I found a job, so I'm going to stay here. See you later.
Very similar to H.H. Holmes again.
Yeah. And so... this is another weird thing that kind of points towards Cricket, is that when Gunner's body was found, and this is, by the way, when Charles Ng was still in prison, police discovered that he was killed by not one gun, but two, which strongly suggests that since Ng was in prison, the only other partner that Leonard Lake had was Cricket, strongly suggests that they killed Fat Charles together.
Is it possible that Lake freaked out and he just grabbed two guns with both of his hands? Or like he's in a crazy,
like he's in a John Woo movie,
like he's Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, just pop.
It's like white doves come out from behind him.
Yeah, but like really fat pigeons.
And this entire time, Lake had been constructing, with the help of a local boy named Randy.
Aw, nothing like a good old boy named Randy.
Mm-hmm. He was constructing the bunker that would become his version of the collector's underground cell. Now, meanwhile, in Kansas, Charles Ng was cooling his heels in Fort Leavenworth, serving 18 months for the theft charge. Ng and Lake, this entire time, had been keeping up a close correspondence. Like, Lake would send Ng, like, naked pictures of Cricket. He'd send him naked pictures of other women that he had convinced to take pictures for him. And he'd also send him detailed plans of the torture bunker that he was building.
Which is very interesting. He sent that right into a prison.
Right. And then Ng would send him naked pictures of himself with his penis tied behind his
Look, look. I make a vagina for you. It's just me. It's extending friendship to friend.
You know, you don't have to send back a picture. Every time I send you a picture, don't even bother sending back another picture.
My other thing, too, is that you feel that if Leonard, like, didn't ever, like, if he skipped a letter with no pictures of Cricket, like, nude or any other various, like, blacked-out-eyed woman nude, that he, like, Leonard, like, Charles Ng would write a letter back just being like, you feeling okay, buddy? You no send nude. Everything okay? You seem preoccupied.
Polaroids broke, so Polaroid machine broke there. Camera.
And Ng, quite the chatterbox about all of this. Everything that Leonard would tell him, Ng would tell to his fellow cellmates. And that wasn't the only thing that he would talk about. He would talk all the time about his plans to train and assemble a paramilitary unit to help him rob banks, to help him steal missiles from military bases so he could shoot down passenger jets. He'd talk about how he wanted to bomb bus stations, and he would, of course, talk a lot about torturing women, which his fellow inmates said he had, quote, quite the imagination for.
I still like the continuing of that, no pain, no gain, no cure, no thrill. Where's the beef? Where is the beef?
That's a good question.
Got milk?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got milk? I got milk. I pour my Riddler udder I got here. I make milk all day round.
Little known fact, Ng came up with the majority of slogans we use today for beef and milk products.
Time to make the donuts.
Yes, that's correct.
To make some donuts. Time for me to make your donut, and I got all sorts of icing down here in my icing pouch.
You know, he always starts off really, if we just take the first sentence, I think we can use that for the slogan.
Have it your way, and by having it your way, I mean, I do you from behind.
I think we'll have it your way. Very good, Charles. Thank you.
So after 18 months, amazingly, Ng was not sent back to Hong Kong, because Charles Ng was not an American citizen. He was a Hong Kong citizen who had faked a birth certificate to get to gain entry into the Marines. So that's one of the reasons why people say that's probably why he didn't get deported, because through some sort of clerical error, his birth was still listed as, like, I think Indiana on his records. So they just let him back out into the general population, and Ng rejoined with Leonard Lake in July of 1984.
Again, lack of detail-oriented police officers have kept these people on the streets.
Well, this isn't the police. This is corrections officers.
It was the same thing with the FBI
files.
Technically
the military.
If you ever watched the series The FBI Files on Netflix, basically with that entire show was about how the FBI, like, fucks up until they somehow randomly catch the criminal.
Right, for a speeding ticket or something like that. But these were actual files, paperwork that, you know, it's up to these people's eyebrows. And it's so easy to make a mistake in these situations.
Yeah, they're not really looking. This is just some little guy that got caught stealing some weapons.
And the military let him in, so you would think that, you know, that vetting process, he would have been caught there.
Yeah, you'd think so, but unfortunately not. So the day after Charles Ng reappeared in Leonard Lake's life, Leonard's journal, which he kept up every single day for over a year, the entries suddenly stopped. The last entry he would write for 2 months would be a short little story about how he had tried to teach Charles Ng how to drive that day. Charles Ng, okay, was not a great driver.
What do you mean?
He was a very bad driver. In San Francisco, he got into 2 car accidents in the first week he tried driving. He got into another car accident when he turned right in the front of a big truck a couple months later from one of the trucks that they had stolen.
But I heard he was very good at dragging a basket with 2 sticks on the side of it and had wheels on it with people sitting in it.
Right, and that's why you can't believe stereotypes. Just look at Charles Ng. He loved playing with nunchucks. He pretended to be a ninja. He kicked pencils out of people's hands with his feet.
Terrible driver.
You cannot believe stereotypes.
Super thick glasses.
Loved Bruce Lee. I mean, this guy is just
breaking barriers.
Yes.
So the first victim following Ng's release was Albert Gialetti, a 36-year-old openly gay DJ at a small San Francisco radio station. Gialetti had placed an ad in The Spectator, which is San Francisco's local underground paper, offering, quote, oral sex for straight men. Ng answered the ad, walked in, and killed Gialetti in his own apartment.
Like a real piece of shit.
Yeah, like a real piece of shit. And really what I think they don't... You know, what I think this is that this is Ng's first known murder. I think this is Leonard Lake saying, like,
you got to get out there. You got to get into it.
Yeah, you got to get out there. You got, if you want to take part in this, if you truly want to be a part of what we're doing, you got to go out and kill somebody. You got to get something out of the way. So, and these people, of course, did not hold homosexuals in high opinion. So they figure easiest thing to do is find a guy in, you know, in the want ads in the Spectator, go and kill him, and no one's going to give a fuck. And you know what? They were completely and totally right.
If I was Leonard Lake, I would not be thrilled that the guy I said, go kill somebody, and then he killed a famous DJ.
He wasn't a famous. Problem. He wasn't.
I mean, but
a famous
the guy was
DJ.
On air on a daily basis.
He's
I would
still
assume
a public persona.
Trust me, I've been a DJ on the radio before. They're not going to miss him all that much.
Yes,
yeah,
so
it's. I've been a DJ on a small radio station before. It's if you're gone, people don't really know.
Is that the other form of the less dead?
Yeah, it's black prostitutes and DJs. Oh man.
Yeah, FM DJs, dime a dozen, man. It's totally fine. So, with his first murder out of the way, Ng was ready to join Lake in their first mass murder. See, many of Lake's letters mentioned the desire to step up from photography to full-on video for the M-Lady sessions. And that equipment would be stolen from Harvey Dubs, owner of Video Dubs, a small self-run business that specialized in filming weddings, christenings, bar mitzvahs, and other such events. And less than a month after Ng was released from prison, he and Lake showed up at the Dubs household under the guise of renting said equipment. But unfortunately for the Dubs family, Lake and Ng would in fact be there to murder every single one of them.
And this is legitimately a reason why I had a piece of furniture that I was going to try and sell on Craigslist. And this was, I cited this example of being like, this is why I don't let random people come into my house. And it's just the truth. It's just a straight up, if you're doing Craigslist, I will tell you this. Find a safe meeting ground or like leave it outside. Don't let them know what apartment you're at, because this is what happens is that your entire family, they go in there while the Dubs family is eating dinner. They check out all the equipment, and then Leonard Lake and Charles Ng take the entire family at gunpoint to a rape bunker.
Yeah. Yeah, they herd him into the van, telling them like, listen, we only want your money. And Ng, by the way, he said later that Leonard Lake committed all of the murders.
Of course. Ng was completely... They both threw each other under the bus as much as humanly possible.
Of course. And he said that Lake broke into the Dubs apartment, herded him out into the van after dark, and told him that he only wanted the money, strangled him, and then buried him in holes he had already dug. This was not a crime of passion. It wasn't something that they it just so happened that things got out of control and they killed him. This was premeditated. Their plan was to go in, kill the family and steal the equipment.
But they raped the wife. They took the husband, they murdered the husband immediately. They took the woman into the M-Lady holding room, and then they don't know what they did to the baby.
Well, they don't know what they did to the baby, but
they certainly didn't raise it to be president.
They didn't. No, huh?
Yeah, because it was a husband, a wife, and their 16-month-old child. And Ng claimed that he didn't know what happened to the baby, but another cellmate later testified that Ng told him that Leonard forced him to kill the baby as a training exercise, like the urban legend about the Nazi SS officers having to raise a puppy and then having to kill it upon graduation.
That's why we gotta arm puppies and babies. They all need guns.
I think every baby and puppy should have a collar on it with a grenade on the front of it.
I agree.
And that baby or dog can be trained to pull the pin on the grenade in case they're ever stolen.
That'll be in Look Who's Talking 8, the militarized baby.
Suicide watch.
That same cellmate also said that Ng went into extreme detail about exactly what had transpired that night after they had abducted the family and taken them back to the torture bunker. This is, by the way, the exact court transcripts.
And now, go just remember that his cellmate was named Maurice LaBerge.
Yes, Maurice LaBerge. Did you tell Maurice LaBerge that you tried the asshole death grip on Deborah Dubs?
No.
Did you tell Maurice LaBerge that the asshole death grip is to strangle a girl with her pantyhose and twist it as you were fucking her in the ass?
No.
Don't, this is real, Henry. Please.
Yes, it is real, but this speaks to just the horrible douchebaggery of Charles Ng, that he had these horrible names for these things.
Well, he's just a piece of shit. I keep saying piece of shit, but that's just what they are. He's a nasty little garbage man who's like all he is. He likes everything sneaky and stealing, and it's just horrible. So, I feel bad that he's Asian. I don't even want to be using the Asian voice. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Don't want to be using the Asian voice.
I'm just
the one
saying.
Time that we've. Oh, so you're saying that you're not enjoying that we actually have a killer from Hong Kong?
It does provide certain liberties.
It does.
So this pretty much ends the second episode of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. In the third episode, we're going to get a little bit more serious. We're going to get heavier.
Yeah, it's going to be much heavier.
What we're going to learn about Leonard Lake and Charles Ng is that they are probably two of the worst criminals we'll cover in all of Last Podcast in the Left. They're as bad as they get.
Yeah.
They killed entire families. They killed babies, raped women, and murdered adult men. They did all of it. They tortured and killed and beat and stole, and they were horrible people.
Yeah. And did it with glee.
Yes, and not the television show Glee.
They didn't sing the whole time, huh?
No, it was not an a cappella thing.
No.
Huh. No, they're a bunch of scumbags and schmucks, and that's why we mock them. And again, yes, like Henry said, if you have something to sell, Craigslist, just do it at a Starbucks. Yeah, all right. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Let's see here. What do we do now? Let's do a Twitter thing.
Yeah.
So you can find Marcus Parks on Twitter at Marcus Parks, and I'm at Ben Kissel. Henry Zabrowski is at Henry Loves You, and I don't use Instagram that much, but I figured you use Instagram quite a bit, so people should find you on there.
Yes, find me on Instagram.
Yeah,
it's at Dr. Fantasty, DrFantasty.
And go and follow me on Spotify. I've got a bunch of playlists over there that you can check out. You know, I'm working on some cool projects over there. So, yeah, go follow me. Go follow me on there, and we can trade some music.
Seriously, please follow him. It really gives his life purpose.
It does.
And
it really does.
Yeah, but if no one follows, then...
Oh, no, I've got a few.
All right.
I've got a couple people follow me out there, and I very much appreciate each and every one of you.
I love it.
I will tell you a little bit, a really quick Christmas story. So one thing I'll say about Christmas is, one thing I like about it is that every Christmas tree sales booth, the salesmen at the Christmas tree booths are always fucking hammered. No matter where you are, they're always drunk.
Oh, Jesus. Yes.
The two of them next to Jackie's house. Jackie has got
Christmas tree.
My sister. They have a Christmas tree selling thing right next to her place.
Mm-hmm.
They got so drunk, they accidentally set fire to a whole section of the trees. I was coming on the block, literally live fire happening with a fireman putting out with a fire hose, literally just saying, "Christmas is over! Christmas is over!"
Well, that's a hell of a day for the firemen.
Oh, God, years with those fucking drunk assholes. One of them sleeps in the porta potty sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking disgusting.
I love those guys. They're doing great. They're doing God's work, selling Christmas trees to a bunch of Satanists.
The real version of elves.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Vagrants.
Elves have trailers.
And if you guys want your Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch. If you order by December 20th, then you have a very good chance of getting your t-shirt by Christmas. The last shipment we're sending out is going to be on December 21st, so be sure to get them before then, especially if you're getting a medium, because we're running a little low on medium, so be sure to get in there and get those things.
And that's good to hear. People are getting smaller.
Isn't that nice?
It doesn't make any sense. Last time we ran out of larges first, so I ordered more of them. Now we're running out of mediums first. It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
ordering t-shirts is hard.
If I know anything about the larger person, we like to get to things first. first, including buffets and t-shirts. So that's what we do.
Well, hail Satan, everyone.
Hail yourselves.
And Heil Gein, and also thank you to Megan Fierro-Root and Sammy Coughlin for their research help. And also thank you to Jose for taking care of all of our t-shirts.
And if you see a priest this Christmas season, pull his pants down.
That's...
Make him feel like a little boy.
That's right.
Don't they wear frocks?
I don't know. Fucking beat him up.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.